direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and well, we have him. For a moment there, I was worried we were trying to call Fred Brunson, but busy guy that he is, went to voicemail, he called us. So, this story is fascinating, and you're about to hear it. But if you don't know Fred Brunson, well, obviously you're just not much of a fan of music. I say that because his books, many of which are just reference points, the number one books and so much more, and you'll find out all about them. I've got the link on Raleigh.net to fredbrunson.com. But before we do anything else, let's welcome him. So, Fred, welcome to WGN Radio.
Thanks, Raleigh. I don't know about that voicemail thing. Boy, that caught me by surprise. But here we are.
Oh, yeah. We've been calling. It goes direct to voicemail. And I was writing you an email. I won't send it now, obviously. And the email said, are you sure this is your number? But
yeah, well, I'm glad I connected with you. Thanks.
Yeah, no. You know, we've known each other well over 40 years. And, of course, when you were first writing the number one books, they're just such a godsend. I absolutely love them. But, you know, something I didn't realize was you had done the Dick Clark book.
Yes. So I worked with Dick for like 35 years. And one day he called me into his office and said, I just made a book deal. You want to write a book about American Bandstand? Didn't take me very long to say yes.
Absolutely. So I got to ask, because Dick was never too generous in giving credit where credit was due, but was there much on Bob Horn?
Yeah, there was. Okay. I'll tell you why. When we started the book, Dick said, look, and not necessarily talking about Bob Horn, but he said, for most of my career, I have not said a lot of things. I didn't want to offend anybody. You know, you say something and you might lose half your audience. So I just, you know, kept going without getting into personal things. I think it's time. Let's just talk about everything. And he said, I want to be honest. I don't want this to be a milquetoast book. So I had free rein to go anywhere.
Oh, wow. All right, and I know I've got a link to your books page, and I'm going to order that on Amazon to read every word of it. That's terrific. Now, when you reached out a few months ago about Rockin' in the Kremlin, I said, yeah, send it, and you did. And at first I looked at it, and of course, David Junk, it is his story. I see, he's born in 1965, and clearly he grew up on AOR radio and all that. Well, I don't know. And, you know, I was, let's face it, I was predisposed against this book from the start. And I started but I started to read it, and it was just spellbinding. I had, you know, like everybody else would say, I had no idea. So this is a kid, David Junk, who grew up, I mean, he's not a kid now, obviously, but at the time, who grew up in the farmland of Ohio. Closest city is Milquetoast, Columbus, and he's listening to AOR. And I found it interesting that in college he's studying Chinese. So right there I say, well, he's a little different. And next thing I know, he goes over to see the Wall, the concert that Pink Floyd made good on, which is amazing. But the next thing I know, he's got a Jones to go to Russia. Now, when he was first interested in Russia, was he already putting it together with music?
No. In fact, his first job that took him to Russia, he went to work, you know, he was going to school in San Francisco.
Yeah.
He got a job with a Russian diamond company that had opened an office in San Francisco, and they sent him to their Moscow office. So that was his introduction to Russia, and that job ended pretty horribly because the Russian diamond company was stealing diamonds from Russia, and David almost went to Siberia.
Yeah,
but he didn't do it. Yeah, so that job ended, and then he saw one ad for Heinz ketchup in Russia, and thought, well, I'll apply for that. And a week later, there's another one ad for Polygram Records, and he said, oh, that'd be much more interesting. Yeah. So, no, it wasn't for music at first.
Well, and you talk about that in the book, obviously, and yes, after I read about the diamond debacle, which literally almost did wind him up in Siberia, and even after he was at Polydor, he was still worried for a while. Normally, I'd think, well, I'd be on the next plane out of there. But so he goes to the record industry, and the first thing I discover is why the record companies don't want to be in Russia. The idea of the bootlegging is just unbelievable.
Yeah, they had 90% of sales were for bootlegged and pirated CDs that sold for $2, whereas Polygram was putting out the real CDs for $20. So think about it. Why wouldn't you go buy a CD if you're just, you know, a person living your life in Moscow, and you can buy Elton John for $2, and they've added Rocket Man to it because they could put anything they want on a CD. So it was a huge problem.
Absolutely, and made worse by the fact that these were good quality boots. This wasn't garbage. I mean, the quality of the records was as good as buying it from the label. So I'm not surprised that the companies gave up their gave up the idea and said, put up their hands in the air and said, I give up. Why did Polygram decide that they were going to open an office?
Well, you know, it really goes back to the Scorpions, Wind of Change, a song that was an anthem for, you know, what was changing, the fall of the Soviet Union and Glasnost in Russia. And, in fact, the Scorpions were welcomed to the Kremlin by Gorbachev.
Wow.
And a Polygram representative went with them. And that started the seed of maybe we should open it up, maybe things are changing, and we should open an office here.
Wow. Now, of course, what I also found interesting is maybe they weren't changing so fast. So was bootlegging really David Junk's biggest problem when he went to Polygram?
It was one of his biggest problems, yes, because how can you make money if 90% of Bon Jovi's records are not your, you know, they're bootlegs. All their money is going to the pirates, which was really, that whole industry was controlled by the Russian mafia, and they were using the money to fund terrorism, sex trafficking. You know, it wasn't going to charity. So it was a fight. And as you know, because from the book, one of the things he found out was when he went with Interpol and Russian police to go shut down one of the pirate factories, it turns out it was on a military base, and the military police trumped, pun intended, trumped the Moscow local police. They couldn't get, they weren't even allowed onto the base. They couldn't do anything. So what eventually happened is that David had a talk with the U.S. ambassador at the time, and said, you know, we need to solve this problem. He convinced the U.S. ambassador to Russia to talk to George Bush and say, unless you shut down piracy, you can't join the World Trade Organization. And that worked.
Wow.
And so the Russian government became cooperative. And, you know, they also weren't getting any tax money from the pirates.
Right.
So it was a boon to them to have a legitimate business and collect tax on these sales.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting when he gets there and he finds out it's the military and, oh my God, the government's involved in with us. At this time, you and I would have been packing our bags and saying, going home. You know, as it plays out in the book, it wasn't overnight that they were able to, in fact, combat terrorism. So a lot more was involved. And one of the interesting things was, I think initially from the book, I came away thinking that initially their thought was they wanted to sell their product in Russia. They weren't so much thinking of it in terms of they wanted to develop Russian artists.
Well, actually, that was one of David's goals,
right?
When he went there, his role models were David Geffen and Clive Davis, you know, people who ran very successful labels in America. So he wanted to do, he had many things he wanted to do. He wanted to fight piracy. He wanted to bring artists from the West to Russia to perform, and he did.
Yeah.
And he wanted to develop Russian artists that could be popular in the rest of the world. And his model, you know, what he was telling the Russians was, look at ABBA in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
They have made Sweden a lot of money, and your Russian artists can do the same for you. They can be international artists. So that was one of his main goals.
And it happened. We're talking to Fred Bronson, fredbronson.com. And if you go to raleigh.net, the link right to Rock and the Kremlin is right there. It is a fascinating read. And even if the music is not in your wheelhouse, which certainly isn't in mine, this book will just captivate you. And it's an interesting look at the world, not only musically, but politically as well. And we'll pick it up right there on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Obviously, Pink Floyd, and this is in some ways the impetus for David Junk and his odyssey. I mean, here's Pink Floyd saying, well, if the wall ever falls, we'll play there. And sure enough, it does, and they make good on their promise. And next thing you know, kid standing in line in Columbus to buy a ticket is none other than David Junk. And we're talking about his story. Rock and the Kremlin is the book, and Fred Bronson is the author. And he's writing, obviously, David Junk in many ways is the author, but he's writing just eloquently for David's thoughts there. And we're talking to him. So, all right, Fred. So here we are. And, you know, as I say, I think when David wanted to break records of Russian artists, I'm not 100% sure the label initially was thinking about that. They were, from what I gathered from your book, they were thinking more in terms of, well, let's sell, you know, other records in Russia. So now we're talking imports. And I think here's the next big shock to the record industry. Hip-hop becomes the big import. Now, how did that happen?
Well, it's a great story, actually, how it happened. So David's sitting in his office, and, of course, there are courier packages going back and forth from Universal in Los Angeles and also in London. And he gets a package from L.A., and he opens it up, and it's, you know these, it's a white label vinyl album. There's no information, no artist name, no song titles. So he puts it on his turntable, and he is totally blown away. It's an artist no one had ever heard of at this point. In fact, he was told, do not share this with anybody yet. It was Eminem, the Marshall Mathers LP, the very first album. And David just went, this is incredible. This is genius. This is going to be huge in Russia. And he disobeys his bosses, and he immediately brings it to the radio stations. And they play it, and Eminem, that album, sold massive amounts in Russia. way more than a lot of other countries. In fact, Eminem came to Russia and thanked David for selling so many copies of his debut album. And that sparked the whole hip-hop movement in Russia, paved the way for Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre and Jay-Z. They all became big in Russia. And then Russian hip-hop artists started recording. Homegrown Russian hip-hop, and is still a force in Russia today.
Probably more so than anywhere in the world, or so it seems. And
it's huge.
Yeah, it is huge. And again, the record labels never would have known this, because never in their wildest dreams would they have expected this to work in Russia. Why did David think it would work?
He heard something in that album. And, you know, I grew up with when you grew up, so yeah. I'm like you. Not all the music, you know, that's necessarily in the book is my favorite either. I don't hate it, but, you know, I'm more Leslie Gore and Bobby V, and along come the Beatles and Motown, you know. But he heard something in that Eminem album, try to say that 10 times, that he just got it. He got it. And, look, a lot of people agreed with him. A lot of musicians, you know, were huge Eminem fans. It wasn't my music either, but he got it.
Which is amazing. Now, also with a political backdrop, one of the things about Russia is they're really against any artist who will do anything that in any way disses the establishment, so to speak. And I would have thought that, to say the least, I would have thought that hip-hop would be threatening.
Well, I think it sort of got away from them. And to be honest, there have been artists who are anti-establishment that Russia has allowed to be. Now, I don't know about today, but in the time that David was there. So the most popular famous Russian female artist, the diva of Russia, is Alla Pugacheva. I know we don't know her here.
Right.
But she is like the Barbra Streisand of Russia. And in her act, she puts down communist leaders, and all the communist leaders were in the front row, and they were enjoying it. So there have been artists who have gotten away with it.
Just absolutely amazing. And the other thing, of course, is there were acts that David developed that sold well outside of Russia. The story of Tattoo, or T-A-T-U, if you will, is fascinating as well. But before that, he was developing a gal, and I found this story fascinating because the gal would have gone so much further if her father wasn't involved with Russian politicians and everything else. What went bad there?
Yes, everything. First, David discovers her and thinks, this is going to be my Britney Spears, my Christina Aguilera, and I can break her outside of Russia. Her name was Alsu. She was a teenage girl, the first Russian artist signed to Universal Music Russia, and he takes her to the Eurovision Song Contest, which gives her a global audience, especially in Europe and Australia. And she comes in second, does very well. I mean, that was the best Russian placing, you know, to that date. And he gets her signed to Universal in London, in the UK. And they're all, you know, just, they want to push her. She's got this huge British fan base now because of Eurovision. And then, sadly for her, all those people are fired.
Yeah.
And new people come in, and because they didn't sign, you know this story, they didn't sign Alsu, they have no interest in her.
Right.
And that's the end. And once the UK isn't interested, then France is not interested.
Right.
Spain is not interested. So, but David tries to rescue her. And he brings her to America to meet with Leah Cohen at Def Jam. And he likes her, and he's really interested in her. And then she's in his office, and he wants to know if she's going to really go for this. And he says, Alsu, are you hungry? And she says, oh, no, I had a muffin this morning. And that started sort of the end of her American career.
Yeah.
And the father, of course, was very upset. And what really sealed the deal in America against her was David got her to perform at a Trump casino in Atlantic City, and Lear Cohen borrowed Donald's helicopter and flew them all to the venue from New York City. And the father berated Lear, saying, why did you drop her in England?
Oh, no.
Which Lear had nothing to do with,
right.
Of course. He's in America. He had no part in what happened in the UK. And he just didn't like being yelled at by the father. And that was the real end of Al Su in America.
Sad, sad story. We're talking to Fred Bronson, fredbronson.com. Rockin' the Kremlin is the book, the story of David Junk. And we'll pick it up there in moments here on WGN Radio.
Get in the box and shut your mouth. I'm shipping you far away. There's a book inside on Kodiak dances and a comet flag to wave. You say we when you mean me, so reckon ready to let you stay. Inside of a year you'll be premier, cause you're seeing things their way. To Russia with care, the address reads, they're needing propaganda like you. A talking machine, a spouting pretty dreams that never, never do come true. I'm shipping you by air to Russia with care. You don't fit the USA. Gal, I've had it. Now Moscow gets it. Go turn all the red hair gray.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. I couldn't resist it. Yes, every Russian stereotype on a 45 RPM Harold Weekly, 1966 on Columbia to Russia with care always makes me smile. But for the most part, sadly, that's probably what most Americans view Russia to be and the Soviet Union. Now we have the wall falling and freedom reigning. I put that in quotes. And we have David Junk in the middle of Moscow. And talking to Fred Bronson, of course, fredbronson.com, and Rockin' the Kremlin is the book. In addition to what I learned about music, hip-hop being big in Russia, probably the most noteworthy, although he did a hell of a thing with dance music, too, to a lot of people's surprise. But what was also interesting to me, Fred, is that you really got a look at the area. You know, when I read about him doing a music festival in Transylvania, you know, most of us can't find Transylvania on a map as far as that goes. But more recently, of course, Ukraine's in the news every day, whether you want it to be or not. And David had some great insight into Ukraine. He loved it.
He did. So after a while of being the CEO of Universal Music Russia, he was also named VP of Eastern Europe. So all of Eastern Europe fell under his, you know, domain. And that meant going to all these countries. And in Ukraine in particular, he opened a Universal Music office, which really was the start of a music business in Ukraine that wasn't Russian. Up to that point, everything in Ukraine, you know, Russia, they really want, and still do, want to eliminate Ukrainian culture and replace it with Russian culture. So this Universal Music Office Ukraine was a sea change, and he signed Ukrainian artists. Other record labels followed into Ukraine, as they did in Russia after Universal. He produced a television show called An American Chance in Ukraine, where he wanted to put together a Ukrainian version of the Spice Girls, and it was filmed in Los Angeles. They did auditions in Ukraine, and the five finalists came to Hollywood and had all these adventures in Hollywood on Ukrainian television. So he did a lot there and developed a lot of friendships, a lot of work colleagues, and as you know from the epilogue of the book, He returned to Ukraine actually twice last year in the middle of the war, which was, I wouldn't have done it, but he was very brave. And he actually wanted to be there on the night of the 2024 Eurovision Song Contest, which Ukraine was supposed to host, but of course could not during the war. So he wanted to be there with his friends to watch the event on television live. And shortly after the live broadcast started, Moscow launched the first hypersonic missile at Kiev, and they had all run for the shelters. And he spent almost every night in a shelter as the city came under attack.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. Now, you mentioned him being brave. Well, I first got a real glimpse into his bravery when he interviewed with PolyGram, when he was told, well, we'll pay your wife $1 million if you have a violent death, and we'll pay up to $5 million if you're kidnapped. I mean, most of us would say, okay, see you later, bye. And with that in mind, he went. So clearly, he was not going to let any of this deter him. Now, to most of us, we can't separate Ukraine from Russia from anybody else in the Eastern Bloc for the most part. But what I found really interesting was that David really saw dramatic differences between Ukraine and Russia. And in fact, it appears that, I don't know if this is the impetus for the war or whatever, but there was just wonderful farmland and wonderful culture. And with that in mind, what differentiated the culture of Ukraine from Russia?
Well, and you're right about the golden fields of wheat, by the way, because Ukraine is the breadbasket of Europe and beyond, and that's definitely something Russia wanted. But this goes back centuries, you know, Russian domination of Ukraine and wanting to erase their culture and replace it with Russian culture. You know, when they went into Crimea, again, as you know from reading the book, people that David thought were reasonable people were telling him, you know, Crimea is ours, and now we can go there on vacation again because they have the best beaches. So there's this ownership that Russia feels toward Ukraine, and I think it is hard for us to understand here, but David lived through it, saw it from both sides, you know, and understood what was going on, and was a big part of establishing Ukraine's own culture.
Yeah, and really codifying it and making it preserved in some ways as well. We're talking with Fred Bronson, and Rockin' the Kremlin is the book. As I say, even if it's not your music, I'll tell you what, it is just a window on the world, and in some ways so very apropos to today's news. So I'd say read it. I couldn't stop reading it. 888-876-5593 if you've got specific questions. Otherwise, I will continue to hog Fred. But believe me, Rockin' the Kremlin, so fredbronson.com. If you go to raleigh.net, I've got a link right to the books, and you can order it for yourself. Now, if you listen to this show, the one thing I know about you is you love radio, or you wouldn't put up with me. Well, then you should know about the Sea Crane Company, and maybe you do. And, you know, I'm always talking about how great their radios are because all of them have amazing reception, both AM and FM, the kind of reception that radios used to have 50 years ago. Well, it's not only radio. Bob Crane has brought reception to the internet as well with his CC Wi-Fi 3. You know, if you've got a wireless access point and you know what it's like, sometimes whatever you're trying to connect to it is dropping or you're not picking things up, and maybe you've got a Wi-Fi radio and maybe it connects or it doesn't. Well, the CC Wi-Fi 3 is rock solid. It will connect no matter how paltry your wireless access point is. But not only that, it is intuitive. You will not need to read the manual. It is just so easy to operate that you just plug it in, tune it in, you'll be there. Now, of course, you can go to ccradio.com, and I hope you will, ccradio.com, read all about the CC Wi-Fi 3 and get all the instructions you ever would want. But I'm telling you, it is something that you won't be signing up for an app. You won't have any microphone to worry about. There are no ads on the screen, no monthly fees. It's got a full-size remote control, too. So What it really has is radio stations and audio from all over the world. Imagine having over 30,000 radio stations from which to choose. Now, if you can't go online, I normally would say call them, but of course, if you can't go online, you don't want the CC Wi-Fi 3, but it makes a terrific gift. So 800-522-8863 is their phone number. They'll answer all your questions, and they'll even send out a hard copy of the catalog as well. But if you can go online, yeah, you check it out. You'll be drooling. CC Wi-Fi 3 from the Sea Crane Company. CCRadio.com. You tell them Raleigh sent you on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and yes, of course, Chuck Berry back in the USA, 1959 on Chess, and we're just about to get to David Junk coming back to the USA, not that he's going to stay, but Rockin' the Kremlin is the book, and Fred Bronson is the author, and it is just a fascinating read, and an insight that you otherwise wouldn't get into a world that's literally on the news every day. So, Fred, when David decides to leave, I was a little surprised at first. He married a Russian woman. He's getting a family together. I thought, well, he's there forever. What was the impetus to come back to the States the first time?
Well, good question. So, terrorism, actually. I'm going to mention some events that, you know, people have heard about. There was the takeover of a theater by Chechens, and hostages were being held inside a theater, and a lot of the hostages died, but so did a lot of Russian citizens die in an attempt to rescue them. Mm-hmm. So that was one terrorist event. And then there was a horrible, horrible first day of school terrorist attack where children were held hostage, and almost 200 children died in the attempt to rescue them, which both events David blames on Russian security. Mm-hmm. And then after that, David had hosted a UK executive, Max Hull, from Universal Music in London, and they're walking down the street, and in front of them, there's an explosion in the subway and smoke pouring out of a subway station. There had been an attack from Chechens in Russia, and it was just too dangerous.
Yeah.
He sent his wife and children back to America, well, to America for her.
Right.
And he wanted to follow, but he wanted to wind things up in Russia. So eventually he joined them in America. And he was there for several years. But he went back in 2013 to head up the first Gibson guitar showroom in Moscow, and then came Crimea, you know, the first invasion of Ukraine, and that was it for him. So he returned to America and has been back here ever since.
And I understand that when he went back the second time, he didn't bring his family, because had he done that, his sons could have been drafted into the Russian military. They stayed behind. Now, he's in Southern California today, I understand.
Yes, he runs the Bang & Olufsen stores in Southern California.
Yeah, how nice. And is his wife still with him?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, that's great.
They've been together, I think, almost 30 years, and their sons are adults now.
Yeah. And are their sons still stateside?
They are.
Okay.
They are. And of course, involved in show business.
Absolutely. It's a phenomenal story, and Rockin' the Kremlin is absolutely worth the read. And I'm not surprised, you know, when we were talking before about Dick Clark, of course, you jumped to it to write that, and for all the reasons we'd understand. Yeah. But I assume that when you found out this story, you were just as quick to say, yeah, I want some of that.
Well, I'll tell you quickly how that happened. I had actually not seen David for a few years. And then Billboard asked me to write a really in-depth piece on Ukraine and Russia in Eurovision, the politics, the rivalry, the history. And I did a lot of interviews. And I thought, I've got to find David because he went to Eurovision representing Russia. He'll have things to say. I found him. We did the interview. He said, next time you're in L.A., let me take you out to dinner. He took me to the Ivy, which you can't argue with, you know.
Absolutely.
And over dinner, he said, he said, I want to write a book about my time in Russia. And I said, do you have a publisher? No. Do you want me to talk to my editor and see if he would like your book? Yes. I called my editor, who I was working with for the first time, a new editor, and he said, I want that book. That's exactly the kind of book I want. And I said, David, good news, he wants your book. And David said, oh, would you write it? And that's when it was an immediate yes, of course, I would love to.
Yeah, and you you did him proud. It is just, as I say, it's truly spellbinding. You will learn about the record industry throughout the world, really. But what you're really going to see is a glimpse into the culture, like I say, that we're hearing on the news every day. And I'm sure that that David at this point mourns what's going on in Ukraine.
Oh, absolutely. And Russia. I mean, you know, he was there at the brightest of times. Americans were welcomed. There was freedom coming in, and of course it all, you know, went to hell.
Yeah, it did. But he was there for the best of the times, and in this book you've certainly brought it out. And I'm so glad that you got in touch, and I loved reading it. So thank you.
Oh, I love being back in touch with you. We had good times at Billboard, you and I.
Oh, absolutely.
In the office. I recall them very fondly.
Yes, Billboard, and also, of course, with our sadly now late buddy, Dr. Hitz, Louis Yokoyo, all of our doo-wop dinners and things like that. And
I think of him all the time.
Me too. I miss those days tremendously. Yeah. So hopefully we will hear from you again soon. Stay in touch.
I promise I will. I'm really glad we're back in touch.
Yeah, thanks, Fred. So Rockin' the Kremlin is the book. And as I say, just go to Raleigh.net and FredBronson.com. I've got a link right to the books page. Or although if you don't go there, you'll remember it, FredBronson.com. And apologies. Yeah, I hogged Fred. I know. We'll have him on again, and we will take your questions. But next 2 hours, it's a free-for-all. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine right here on WGN Radio.